Good evening, I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Let's start with news that the government is looking to make the wearing of masks compulsory in public places. In a televised address today, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin said that the government is currently fine-tuning the details. Now, of course, all this comes as news that we've seen new positive cases of COVID-19. They've increased in the past couple of days, double digits that we've seen. Also, the emergence of fresh clusters as detected. What do you think, Sharad? What do you think are some of the considerations that the government is thinking about?
I must say, you know, I'm very wary when we use expressions like double digits, because it could be from everything from 10 to 99. And I think it's still on the lower end of things. So no need to panic, but I think the caution is clearly something
21 cases today, though.
Yeah, okay, but still, it's still on the lower end of the double digit range. And I think it's also important to note that it is a disease. It's not gone away. We don't have a vaccine. And of course, numbers of positives are going to go up and down, as you've seen. It's not going to simply go away. The other thing first is that the conversations that we are having here in Malaysia are replicated across the world.
Right.
And I think that is the fascinating thing, that we are not the only ones talking about whether masks should be made mandatory or not.
But to be fair, the conversations about mandatory mask wearing in the US, you know, differ vastly from what we're having here in Malaysia. I mean, there's not as much, I guess, you know, backlash to wearing masks. I think I'm looking at social media and the chatter on social media after the televised address this afternoon. It seems that many people are saying, well, what's there to discuss? Go ahead and implement it. Well, this is something that seemed to be good.
I think that only one group of people, very vocal, would probably say that.
Remember
the conversation we had about smoking in public places? And you remember not only the pushback, the court case, but also the level of compliance that actually happened in restaurants and such, right? So what we saw was, well, people might not have taken arms, and you don't have the kind of rhetoric that you might have in, say, in an American context, where the sense of self-possession and the sovereignty of the individual is very strong. And yet you don't have compliance. And not only that, the restaurants can't enforce it because for fear that they will offend their customers.
I think that's a very good point. Who enforces this? That's something that the government will have to consider. The other thing I wanted, I thought about hearing this mooted by the Prime Minister was, is cost a consideration? How do you enforce that? Are you going to make masks readily available for everyone? And whether, you know, this might spill over to not just public spaces, but private spaces. So do you wear a mask as you walk on a pedestrian sidewalk and then take it off as you enter into a restaurant or an eatery and the like?
Yeah, so that would be the opposite, right? You'd be free to not wear it in a public but open space, and then in enclosed spaces you'd be forced to wear. The British government has decided to enforce masks for people, customers going into eateries and such. But let's come back to the very interesting premise that of the conversation, which is, in what societies would this be a difficult sell, right? And there's some societies, clearly, Melissa, and we know this, you know, Japanese societies, Northeast Asian societies, where this is a long-term practice. So you have a cold, you cover up, you protect others.
Right.
And so maybe not such a big issue in those countries, but in other countries where this is not a practice, it's a much harder sell.
I completely agree. I also want to point out, Dr. Nur Hisham, DG of Health, he pointed out that, you know, rather than just pulling your mask down, I think, you know, mandatory masks is one thing. Wearing the masks correctly is another. So stop pulling the mask down and putting it under your chin. Either wear it properly or remove it completely.
Well, Melissa, you know, I must say, I'm kind of partly guilty
of
this.
I
think it's really interesting, because I was on the MRT today and noticed that there's still people who don't know they have to cover their noses, or people who think they have to take their mask off when texting. And I wonder about that. Like, is it, I mean, apart from that, you know, moment of facial recognition that your phone needs to make, do you really need to keep your mask down while you're texting? So now we've added more complexity to this, and I think it's something to do with the lack of science education in or scientific outlook in our country, that people really don't understand the science of it. They don't understand the rationale for having the mask, you know. Yeah. So it's like, okay, I wear a mask, but I don't know really why I'm doing it. So when you
to protect others, not your
That's right. That's one thing, but it's also just the mechanics of what's happening. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought that your neck would be the place where you might actually be exposed, and therefore there might be viruses. When you pull it down, you're actually picking up potentially viruses, and when putting it back on your face, you endanger yourself.
So the WHO has said that face masks are a key component in of the non-pharmaceutical arsenal that we have to combat COVID-19. Perhaps some of the things that the government will consider in creating guidelines for mandatory mask wearing in public spaces. All right, let's do a quick follow-up with the story that we discussed last week, Sharad. Now, the government says that it will introduce a new program to replace the National Service Training Program and the National Civics Bureau, or more commonly known as BTN, that's Biro Tata Negara. Now, the structure and the syllabus for this program is still currently being finalized and is said will be tabled to cabinet soon. But if I may quote the minister, Muhammad Rizwan Yusof, who is the minister of the Minister in the Prime Minister's Department in charge of special functions, he said, quote, "This new program is more towards inculcating patriotism and creating a united nation," end quote. So I'm wondering whether this is truly the way to create a united nation. Sharad, what do you think?
Well, I mean, you can get very historical and think about it. I mean, all nations need to be created and recreated, as it were, you know, continually, right? It's a process. The question is what divides us, what brings us together is a complex one, and I think kind of contingent. So will a course bring people together in some sort of way? I'm not sure. I think what we need to do is look back, Melissa, at the previous iteration of these programs.
Right.
And ask ourselves, was there proper postmodern? What was achieved? I understand there were some studies that suggested some level of solidarity that was developed by those who were actually at these programs. But it's very unlike a Singapore or South Korea, where the National Service Program actually is deeply integrated into their military structure.
So male citizens in Singapore and South Korea between the ages of 18 to 35, they have to perform 2 years of compulsory military service. As you said, they're integrated into the paramilitary service. One of the things whether we want to think about if we were to model, you know, after other countries, whether this is something that's just for males, you know, I mean, having this kind of compulsory system that's just for males, excluding half the population, what does that do for camaraderie?
Yeah, well, male camaraderie
male
in Singapore
camaraderie.
For sure. I mean, but, you know, Melissa, there is this other thing, right? And that's got to do with, I mean, who's really going to benefit from this? The last program was, I think the target cost would be something around ₱500 million. And they sort of achieved that and perhaps exceeded that, depending on the year, if you look at some of the numbers out there, between ₱500 and ₱600 million annually was spent. Mm. The question is, are we getting bang for our buck? Who actually benefits from this? Is it about, you know, creating an ecosystem of contractors? Is it about the staff? Is it about the kids who go there? So, and can those same outcomes be achieved, you know, spending much less money and, in fact, having it universally available? Because, remember, only select individuals went for these programs, and wasn't something that, say, if it was done through a school system, would actually maybe achieve a greater results,
well,
at least in terms of universal application.
We hope that there's a lot of reflecting done before this cabinet paper is presented. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now. In just a few minutes, we'll be discussing the Unified Examination Certificate, or the UEC. The chief of the task force on the UEC will be joining us in the studio, so stay tuned to consider this.